Good afternoon and welcome to the Tuesday afternoon program. I am your host, Robert Tomlinson, and I am delighted to be in the studio with two special guests for the first hour, Ms. Tamara Dillon, who's the co-director of the Hudson House, and Adam Weinart, choreographer extraordinaire. We'll find out more about you as the program is unveiled. But welcome to WGXC. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Robert.
So let's start off with a little background. Tammy, how long have you been co-director of the Hudson House?
I've been with the Hudson Opera House, now called Hudson Hall, since September 2013.
And you have a rather extensive background in the arts, starting with working at BAM from, 1987 to 1999 in marketing. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Yes. Can you tell us a little bit about that? I mean, BAM is such a wonderful organization, providing so many great programs.
You know, it's I consider myself kind of a BAM baby. That was my first introduction, and I, like many people, had several careers at BAM. Mm-hmm. And dance was always... I worked for Harvey Lichtenstein, who recently passed away, but dance was always, I think, Harvey's favorite, and it's great to be here with Adam today. And in many ways, BAM, you know, has informed my career, from working at the Fisher Center to then going to work with the late choreographer Merce Cunningham, mm-hmm, in the final 5 years of the company's life, which brought me back to the Hudson Valley.
I see. Okay, we're gonna follow that circle. But I do want to say the first two times I saw Pina Bausch was at BAM. Mm-hmm. And it was an extraordinary experience, a great location. But you moved to Ireland.
I did.
How long were you in Ireland?
I went for a season to work for the Dublin Theatre Festival after leaving BAM, because, mm-hmm, I left BAM because I just hit my glass ceiling. And I couldn't imagine working for any other organization in New York. I'd lived in Ireland before and just thought I'd go hang out with all my Irish friends for, mm-hmm, a season, and ended up getting a fantastic job working for a semi-state agency to finish the redevelopment of Dublin's cultural quarter.
Mm. So you stayed how long?
Four and a half years.
Oh, that's a season.
Yeah.
And then after that, you came to Bard, right, in 2005?
I came back and I volunteered for Merce Cunningham.
Oh, that's first. Okay, so you worked with Merce in the Village.
Yes, although I was just volunteering. I was helping them put together their 50th anniversary at BAM. Mm, mm. And then I came to the Fisher Center, and then back to Merce, and back to the Hudson Valley.
Mm. So what drew you to the Hudson Valley?
When I moved back from Ireland, I had the fortune of attending the opening of Dia Beacon, and I wasn't familiar with the Hudson, mm, Valley, or with... I knew of Dia, and that was just an epiphany, and I started looking for what I thought was going to be a second home in the Hudson Valley, and it has, like so many others, become my primary home.
Mm-hmm. We should explain Dia Beacon for those that don't know. So Dia Beacon is a converted factory located outside of the town of Beacon, and it is how large? It's huge. It's one of the biggest art spaces in the country. Do you remember any of these details?
I don't. Okay.
It's a phenomenal undertaking, and it's really special to be both accessible from New York City and yet to be home-based in the little town of Beacon. It's a great combination, and it's really wonderful to visit there. The art programs are extraordinary. Nice. So I have one little question about your work. What is it that delights you about being at Hudson Hall?
You know, I like working in the arts because it's satisfying and it feels worthwhile, but mostly because the people who we interact with on a daily basis, be it the public, the donors, the artists, mm-hmm, they're all drawn. It's a great community. It's always interesting. You always feel supported. And it's just really satisfying. And at Hudson Hall, we're a small staff.
There's four or five staff members?
We've just grown to five this week. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we do everything. And there's something satisfying in that. There's also something frustrating in that, but just because you don't have enough time to do everything you'd like to do as well as you'd like to do it. But it's fun to be involved in every aspect.
Right. And then, so it, no 2 days are alike either. You have the variety of each day is different.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, that's one way to go through, I think, a good life. Adam, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
So at what age did you think of yourself as an artist? Did you begin to think, aha, I'm an artist?
Well, it's funny you ask. I did a, many, many years ago, there was a show called 7-Up, which was one of the first...
A TV show or radio show?
Yeah, it was a TV show where they interviewed people at 7 and then 14 and 21.
Oh, yes. There's a film, an English series after that. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I think they just did the 49th or something.
Oh, they've done more than that. They're in the 50s. Yeah, yeah, but okay.
Well, anyway, my mom was very inspired by that program. And so when I was 7, she interviewed me. She showed me the footage recently. And I debated whether I wanted to be an artist or a ladybug collector.
Tough choice. And now, of course, you could be both. I mean, well, really easily.
They explained that, you know, collecting ladybugs was more of a hobby than a job.
your dream squashed at such an early age.
But yeah, I started dancing at 6 when we lived in London. I went to the Royal Ballet School.
Oh, my.
You know, pre-Billy Elliot.
Were you born in England?
No, I was born in New York, but my mother's English, and we've spent time both places.
So it sounds like you had a lot of support in your family.
Yeah, absolutely. My mom's a writer. My dad runs a chamber music nonprofit, so they're very simpatico.
How wonderful. Do you have brothers and sisters?
I do. I have 3 sisters and 1 brother, and we were all in the arts. Some of us have drifted towards more lucrative profession. But I'm holding out.
Yes, good for you.
Yeah.
All right, well, that's good to hear. Do you set specific goals for yourself in your practice?
I do. I mean, making the decision to move to Hudson and put down roots in a real way.
And when was that?
That was 3 years ago.
Okay. From New York City?
From New York City. Although, you know, I was based in New York City, but I was traveling constantly. And, you know, maybe it was my Saturn return or something, but I really wanted to be in some place long enough where I could watch something grow. You know, it kind of really started there. Mm. And Hudson's been a really rich place to do that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we were talking before we...
Came on air
about all of these new dance spaces, performance spaces, art spaces that are opening up. And
it is a remarkable sort of moment.
It's wild.
In our area. It's amazing. With Lumberyard coming to town, the renovation of the Hudson Hall. I mean, that's just the tip of the iceberg. But there's amazing things going on here. And people moving here from
Absolutely.
All over. Yeah.
And so I recently started a Hudson Arts Coalition because I think it's important that all of these groups are talking to one another, so that we're not making one another redundant or each inventing the wheel, and we can share resources and
cross promote. Well, we certainly need a calendar to
That's
share.
That's right.
Yeah. So what is it called? What's your coalition called?
Well, it's the Hudson Arts Coalition. We call it HARC for short. It's a little R from the art. It sounded better than hack. And I also have a goal of opening up a dance space in Hudson, because with all of these new spaces, we still don't have a studio.
Come to Catskill. There's cheaper space.
Yeah.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, yeah.
It's only 5 minutes away.
No, I come here all the time. I love the Lumberyard. And they've are already talking about renting my not yet existent dance studio.
They've had a slight postponement,
I guess,
because of asbestos.
Right.
So instead of opening in 2018, it's going to be 2019. But they are very smart in the way that they are engaging the community right now.
Absolutely.
And kudos to them.
Yeah.
It's going to be wonderful when they finally do arrive full time. But that's great. I'm glad to hear that you're talking with each other. Mm-hmm. So this new coalition.
Yeah.
When did it start? And do you meet on a regular basis?
Well, we have a monthly meeting.
The next one is?
Monday the 27th. It's the last Monday of the month, each month. And we've only had one official meeting. We had kind of a gathering, and then we had our first meeting, and our second meeting is to be hosted at Art Omai in just a couple of weeks.
Nice. Omai just sponsored an international reading at Above the Wine Store last Saturday.
Okay.
It was one of the best readings I've ever been to. They had 10 of their international visiting residents, you know, from all over the world, read their work, mostly in two languages. It was so inspiring, and especially to be that's going on in our backyard.
Yeah.
It's really amazing. That's cool. Okay, well, let's jump into Hudson Hall. I have a little bit of material here that Caroline provided with me for me, and I appreciate that. Hudson Hall is a cultural beacon in the Hudson Valley, offering a dynamic year-round schedule of music, theater, dance, literature workshops for youth and adults, as well as family programs and large-scale community events, such as the Winter Walk. It is located on Warren Street in downtown Hudson in a historic landmark that houses New York's oldest surviving theater. Hudson Hall reopens following a year-long historic renovation with an inaugural season beginning in the spring of 2017. So, historically, built in 1855 by a local architect, Peter Avery. Should I read this or do you want to talk about this? It sounds sort of funny just to keep reading.
No, I'm happy to talk about it.
So, let's talk about the various uses in the first 100 years.
You know, the building was City Hall and housed all the civic offices, the Common Council, the police station, the Franklin Library. There was always one room on the ground floor that was used for commercial purposes because even then they understood that earned revenue was a good thing. Mm-hmm. And upstairs on the second floor is a large column-free space, 4,000 square feet, that has been in disuse since the 1960s, if not really the 40s. But in its heyday, it really did everything. I mean, we've just been going through some of the history, and there were temperance speakers were one of the more popular things. There were, it's pre-media, so you have to think these town halls were really where the public could come and gather and listen to political speakers, speakers of the day.
It says here on your list that Frederick Church, Stanford Guilford showed their paintings there.
That's correct.
Bret Hart read his poems. Susan B. Anthony spoke there. So did Teddy Roosevelt. I mean, it's an amazing list of people.
It is. And there were also all these extremely ordinary happenings that were incredibly well attended, from cooking demonstrations to the cotillions to the firemen's, you know, benefit fundraiser, poultry shows, and a number of recitals. And what I like about it, and I would like to hope that we can recreate, is this idea of a town hall, you know, a place that is embracing and serving the community, and that is across all spectrums, from the very local community that's been there for a very long time and continue the work that we do in school and after school and free community programs that go year-round, and all of which are free, to serving the new generation of artists that are moving to Hudson. And it's really an exciting time. I mean, there are just so, as you said, there's just so much going on and so many really talented people. And I also, you know, want to commend Adam for starting the Hudson Arts Coalition. It's a really collegial environment, and yet we all get so caught up in our day-to-day that we sometimes forget to talk to each other. So it's good to have a monthly meeting, and also Adam has organized it so we will each host a different event and visit each other's sites and cross the river and come to Catskill and beyond. And
great. So in the 1960s, the building was bought by a developer and then kind of set vacant for 30 years, right? And then in 1992, a group of citizens decided to save it and bought it.
That's correct.
Is that correct? And now in the last year, if I have this right, you've raised about $3.5 million for the renovations?
Actually, the total cost of the renovations in this phase is $7.5 million.
Oh, my. But you've raised it?
We have. Yeah, and it's been, you know, a long time coming, and we're excited. And it's been with, like, the tremendous support of the community and our individual funders, but also New York State has played a huge role. In fact, I would say New York State is our largest funder by far, both in terms of programming and capital investment.
What specifically were the challenges you had to overcome to convince people to donate to this particular project?
I don't know if there were challenges to overcome. I think everybody wanted to see it happen. I just think, money is not as easy to come by as mm-hmm. some might think it is, or at least not for the arts.
Sure.
And we're a small community. $8.5 million is the total scope of the project. We will still have $1 million left to do. But we will, open with the $7.5 million capital project just completed. And it's a lot of money for upstate.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're really proud. And at the same time, it's been really a case of slow and steady wins the race. It's been methodical. The organization has really, over the past 20 years, undertaken several smaller capital projects so that the final phase of reopening the performance hall is the crowning achievement. Mm-hmm. But from a new roof to stabilizing the building to fire stairs to all kinds of opening
an
the
elevator. You have an elevator now.
We have a new elevator. For the first time in the building's history, we are fully accessible.
Yeah, that's a wonderful accomplishment. So April 22nd is the proprietor's ball.
It is.
What time is that? What is happening?
It begins at 6 o'clock with cocktails and dinner upstairs at 7.
Ooh, dinner.
And another young opera director who has recently moved to Hudson is masterminding the performative aspects. And the vision is to really embrace the community and the people who live in it.
Mm-hmm.
And to celebrate the reopening and of the theater and giving it, returning it to community use for the first time in 55 years.
That's impressive. So am I understanding this is all under the sort of title of the Season of Discovery, right? So beginning with April 22nd. And then on May 21st, there's a community day with the, what is it?
Bindlestiff Family Circus.
Family Circus. Like, tell us about that. That looks exciting.
The Bindlestiffs are great. And they also, 10 years ago, decided to move from New York to the Hudson Valley and have been our hometown circus for the past 10 years. They do a lot of in-school and after-school community workshops with us and with many other groups. They're really committed to that. And the new performance hall will give them the space they need to actually, with the rigging they need, to do aerial acts and to do, the full-on Bindlestiff family show. And we wanted to, open the doors to the community with an open day and also showcase the work of the Bindlestiffs and the kinds of community programs and performances mm-hmm. they offer.
Mm-hmm. And so that will start at what time?
Open house is from 12 to 5 on Sunday, okay. May 21st, with a drop-in workshop for kids to learn circus skills from 1:30 to 3, followed by a free performance with the Big Ring, and Ariel Axe and many other company members with the Bindlestiffs at 3:30. It's free. Reservations are strongly encouraged and can be I can't remember. Am I allowed to say how they're made?
Yes.
By contacting the HudsonHall.org.
Yes, that's fine. That's good. That's great. And then comes three concerts in conjunction with the Classics on Hudson. If I remember correctly, that's a collaboration that's been going on for about 3.5 years?
We're in our third season with Classics on Hudson, okay. And that's under the direction of Eugenia Zuckerman. And it's...
That's an all-volunteer-based organization, yes?
Correct.
Okay.
And Eugenia became artistic director last year. Classics on Hudson was founded by another artistic director, Helena Bailey, who is affiliated with Bard and the conservatory there. It's been hugely successful. There's so much classical music in the Hudson Valley, but oddly, there was not any classical music really being offered on a consistent basis in Hudson. So when they came to us and wanted to partner, we readily said yes, and we're looking forward to serving larger audiences with more sophisticated and groups upstairs, and it opens with Brooklyn Rider on May 7th.
That's great. Just so our listening audience knows, I'll be doing another interview with Eugenia, so we're going to go into a little bit more depth about Classics on Hudson. But there are three concerts coming up. The first one, May 7th, Brooklyn Rider. That's a quartet, yes?
Correct.
Okay. And then May 20th, Tim Fain and Eugenia Zuckerman and Roman Rabinovich.
Correct.
Violin, flute, and piano. That's
and
so
Roman was with us last year. He's an amazing young pianist. Mm. And the third one is Christopher O'Reilly with NPR's From the Top, performing with the cellist Matt Haymovich, who I love the story from Eugenia that he was really the one to go out there with his cello to the pizza parlor saying that, you know, good music, great art can be performed anywhere.
And belongs everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Good. And that's on June 2nd.
Correct.
Okay. And that's the season then, those three performances?
And we're also doing on April 30th a family concert. We do two every year with Classics on Hudson. April 30th is, it's a Sunday, it's at 3 o'clock. It's free for kids. And John Deke is the second chair at New York Philharmonic and music educator, and he works with very young composers to create their own compositions, which are then performed.
Mm, that's exciting. How cool is that?
And then we do an annual Messiah with the conductor Gwen Gould, which this year is Sunday, December 17th. And I can't remember. I can't believe I remember that, but I do.
That is remarkable. So you also have a very active gallery.
We do.
It's so exciting. You walk in this beautiful lobby, and there's real contemporary art on display. And what I have down here from your notes is there's going to be return of Lightfield with Just the Facts, a festival of documentary and vernacular photography.
That's correct.
Do you know when that is?
That opens in August, this summer. We have two exhibitions prior to that, which are both surprises.
Surprises. Okay. Well, let's talk a little bit about community outreach. Tell us about Perfect 10.
Perfect 10 is an amazing group in Hudson, and their focus is on sending every girl to college that participates in Perfect 10, and it's about giving girls that might not have the opportunity.
So when did this start?
Oh, gosh, I don't... you know, Paula Forman started it, I would imagine. I don't know. I think 4 or 5 years ago. I'm not sure it's all that old. Uh-huh.
And how many people participate?
I think it's about 16 girls, mainly in junior and high school.
Mm. And they must make a serious commitment to be part of this.
They do. Every day after school, they go. They have a clubhouse at the new area library in Hudson. And weekend activities, they fundraise for trips to Europe. And I know they're planning a trip to Washington. It's a fantastic program.
Wow. And so who's your co-sponsor or organizer with this? Do you do it with the library?
I can't claim any ownership on it, although we have, we do work with them and have in the past and look forward to it. We are in discussions right now about involving Perfect 10 in a new production of The Mother of Us All, which Virgil Thompson's opera with libretto by Gertrude Stein, about Susan B. Anthony, who spoke twice at the Hudson Opera House.
That's exciting. Yeah, so that's just the beginning of a dialogue that's occurring right now.
We've done a number of programs with them in the past, but I wouldn't... They're one of our beloved community partners.
I see. Okay. And the Winter Walk?
Is the first Saturday of December, as it always is.
But that's a program that was, or I should say a project, or a day that was started by the folks at the then Hudson Opera House, yes?
Yes.
An economic development kind of program for the community?
It was. It was begun to animate the shops 20 years ago, before Hudson is what we know it today to be. And the idea was to animate the shops and the streets in the evenings to get people coming to Hudson and over their fear of Hudson, which at that time was fairly desolate. And it has since grown into being one of the county's largest tourism events. It attracts upwards of 20,000 people. But what's, I think, really special about it is it is a community event. We populate all of the shops with local artists. And
is Warren Street closed down?
The entire mile-long street is closed down.
Okay, great. So it's really wonderful to get on a walk.
It is, and it's a really great, it's a fun event. I mean, Adam could speak to it. He was one of the artists who, we work with artists to animate the streets and the shops down the block.
So what did you do?
Well, I give the Opera House, the Hudson Hall, a lot of credit here for letting us do this. It was actually my husband who proposed a sort of queer nativity scene to take place along Warren Street. And we took over this, what was essentially a traveling art exhibit. It was sort of like a storage container. And yeah, we had this queer nativity scene. I was a sheep. There were other animals and characters. And
so this is a production, not just a still life.
Well, it was a durational performance, perhaps.
Okay.
But and I remember when we kind of proposed this to the Opera House, the initial response was, you know, this is really a family-friendly kind of event we're putting together. I'm not sure this is really appropriate.
Meaning possibly too controversial.
And then Trump was elected. And they called us back and they said, you know what, I think we need to do this. And that was everything we needed. And and it was a real hoot. We had a lot of fun. We, I think, surprised a lot of people. But we also had some people join us. Uh-huh.
So what does the queer nativity scene look like?
Well, you know, there's some salacious pictures.
It was not.
Well, it was an all-male, an all-gay male.
Ensemble. Huh?
Ensemble. We had, Baby Jesus was there, who was protesting the Dakota Access Pipeline. We had an innkeeper who was ironing nothing. It was a hoot.
So you had fun. Okay.
I'm hoping for more things like that in Winter Walks in the
future. So a lot of people actually worked with storefront owners and did displays in windows, yes?
We do. We have the annual Winter Walk window decorating contest.
Oh, it's a contest. Oh.
It is. Friday at 5 o'clock, the day before Winter Walk, is the deadline. And on Friday morning, we drive up and down the street, and we always get a little nervous. Mm-hmm. And there's always a flurry of activity. And by 5 o'clock, it's all come together. And some of the windows are really unique and, fun.
Yeah. So please tell us about the before and after school programs.
This is a part of what we do that not everyone is fully aware of, because so much of it is not, visible to the public. But for instance, this week we have two in-school workshops going for kids. One is with Shano's Circus Theatrics, and we organize these workshops according to the 9-week, after school program, and there are 4 quarters per academic year. Mm-hmm. And today we started a literacy workshop, reading and writing workshop with Allison Fox, the artist. Mm-hmm. But we do these year round during the academic year, and then during the summer, we will do more intensive.
More camp-like structures?
Is that more camp-like. And then we have other programs that go year-round. Every Tuesday night at 5:30 is a hip-hop class, which is scheduled at 5:30 so families can also participate. Mm-hmm. And it's outgrown Hudson Hall, so we now have that, and we work in partnership with the Hudson Youth Department to host it, which is very close by. Mm-hmm. And the workshops are great. Now that we're coming back online, we've also done workshops for adults, life drawing, various talks and lectures, book readings. It goes year round. I mean, we do a lot of these programs.
Right. So give us a speculative image, Hudson Hall in 10 years. What's it look like?
What's it look like?
And of course, you'll still be there, I hope.
Well, I it's kind of the vision of, what is a town hall of today, and, different from, I think we all have a different vision for it. And I can speak to mine, and I think I represent Hudson Halls, but, how can we, using art and culture, embrace this idea of what a town hall means today, and not be a small to medium-sized arts organization that presents a variety of work, but really go more in depth and, you know, from the community workshops to connecting them with what happens upstairs to just a real variety of events. You know, we produced TEDx Hudson, which really proved how many amazing people we have with really fascinating stories.
So I'm taking it, that's a series that plays off of the TED Talks.
And yet it was. We have the local license to do TED Talks in Hudson.
Wow. Will that be part of next year's programming?
We will. It's a lot of work to put together a full day. But it was terrific. And, you know, I'd actually like to ask Adam what he would like to see us, because, you know, we are here to serve the needs of not just Hudson, but the larger community. We're interested in connecting across the river and you know, using the arts as a bridge and not have the river be a divide. And the idea of agriculture is something that we're interested in. You know, Columbia County is 85% agrarian. Mm-hmm. And that's part of what makes it so special, I think, to live where we live. Maybe this is an overused analogy, but it's what makes Napa so interesting to visit, is it's culturally rich, but in a beautiful part of the world and, you know, very close to San Francisco. And I think the connectivity and the train to New York City is a real asset. I think the Berkshires, Glimmerglass, Mass Mocha, Bard, you know, it's...
It all feeds into that wonderful richness in our region.
It does. Yeah. And yet I think what sets us apart from just a deadhead performing arts center is this idea of town hall and people and the variety of things that we might feature.
Yeah, bring to life. So let's follow up with your question to Adam. It was, if I heard this right, so Adam, what would you like to see occur at the town hall? Is that what you're... Okay. So we're not 10 years from now, we're sort of in the immediate future. What would you like to see going on at the Hudson Hall?
Well, you know, I'll just kind of piggyback onto what Tammy was saying. There have been a lot of conversations in over the last year about hearkening back to sort of the earlier model where the Grange Hall was also the Opera House, was also the Town Hall, was also the, you know, barn dance. You know, that these... types of activities can cohabitate in the same space. And I think that's really exciting. And I think that the typical Hudson area resident does have a lot of different interests and a lot of different experiences to bring to the table. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a great fit for the town, and it's certainly a beautiful space.
Mm-hmm. So why do you think there's so many people coming to our area in the last year or two? There does seem to be something almost magnetic about it.
Yeah.
What's your take on that?
Well, I mean, I can only say why I came here, which had to do with space.
Space like affordable space or emotional space or aesthetic space? What does that mean?
Space and time. I mean, I was dancing for a Brooklyn-based dance company that owned and operated two rehearsal and performance venues, but we could not afford to rehearse in them. And we would typically fly to Atlanta to rehearse, because it was cheaper to fly us to Atlanta and house us and rehearse there than it was to work in either of the existing...
Now, come on. What's wrong with Delaware? Atlanta? You went all the way to Atlanta?
Yeah. And that was like a red flag for me. It was like, okay, this lifestyle in New York City isn't really functioning.
Right.
And as a... someone who works in dance, you know, you need space. Like that's like space and bodies is kind of, it's great. That's all you need. But actually sometimes that can be hard to come by.
Mm-hmm.
And in terms of why Hudson, I mean, it was very personal for me and my husband. We both had histories and connections to this city independently of one another. And we just gravitated here. And I think it tends to be personal.
Is he in the arts?
He is, okay. Yes. He is an opera director. And, you know, we at first thought that okay, we both travel for work anyway, so we'll just be based in Hudson, and it'll just be the place from which we travel. But the more time we spend here, the more time we want to spend here. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think we're both putting down roots in ways that we didn't expect to.
Mm-hmm. So I want to ask you a related question for both of you. It looks like the NEA may be coming to an end. We don't know officially, but it sort of looks like that is a likely possibility, which is, of course, shocking. But it's a symbol, I think, in a lot of ways, too, that part of our culture doesn't really understand the importance of the NEA and the importance of the arts. And we see that in our schools, the fact that so much of our public schools doesn't have a comprehensive arts program anymore. So what do you see as the challenges for artists today? And what are you concerned about, and what do you think we can do about them? Adam, you want to go first?
Sure. Well, yes, in this political climate, we've seen a lot of traditional funding streams under threat. I think more pressing, I think, for artists and companies at my scale, because I'm not really getting a lot of NEA grants. Mm-hmm. But what I have seen is there are so many funding streams under threat and so many important vital issues right now that a lot of personal giving is being redirected to political causes and not as much to arts organizations and arts groups. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's a challenge for organizations and groups, but I think that there's an opportunity as well. Because when you're dealing with live performance, I mean, I work in live performance, and I think the power of bringing people together is very tangible right now. And so I think creating these connections between art and activism, which do exist, and underscoring that importance, I think can be very exciting and bring a new kind of vitality. At least that's what I found in my artistic practice.
Mm-hmm. Just a point of clarification here. So the entire NEA budget for last year was $148 million, which is 0.004% of the federal budget. A report that recently came out said that Trump security in New York City and Florida will cost $365 million for 1 year, just to put things in perspective. But locally, the NEA brought into our District 19 in New York $280,000. That's a lot of money that we would allegedly be without.
And I'd like to speak to that. I guess I'm continually amazed by not only the power of art to really transform or open your mind or show you something or speak to you in a way that is through another language, be it movement or music or spoken word, but is people, and the NEA is one of the few funders left that actually funds artists. We are fortunate to currently be the recipient of two NEA grants. And
can I ask how much they are?
They're for $10,000 each, we are beginning our relationship with the NEA, which looks like it's going to be a short one. But you build your reputation and your program based on longevity. And having the NEA is an imprimatur, but they also fund artist fees, which very few funders do anymore. And, I think it's really, artists are being asked to do a lot now, to compensate for arts education, to speak to social justice issues, to do a lot of ancillary activities around their actual art. But they need to make their art to be able to speak to these other issues, and sometimes they are the same. But, artists still need a roof over their head, still need a meal on their table, still need to raise their kids, and need actual funding, and it does generate jobs. I think the whole creative economy happening in the Hudson Valley has been the biggest economic driver, and, you look at what was happening in Hudson 20 years ago. And when I say creative economy, I mean it in the largest sense, from food to design to, the performing arts, the literary arts, the musical arts. But arts are an economic driver and they do employ people, and those people need to get paid. And, you know, to me, the beautiful story that I think is New York State was the first state to have the New York State Council on the Arts within, and that was the Republican governor, Nelson Rockefeller, who founded it. Within 5 years, all 50 states had an arts council and became the model for the National Endowment for the Arts. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think, as I'll quote a former board member at another organization, but the NEA's slogan used to be, "A great nation deserves great art." Mm-hmm. And he would always say, "Great art deserves a great nation."
Well said. You brought up some very important and key points, and I'm glad you've done it. The artists need to make a living. They have to get paid. And artists are asked to do a lot and to do a lot of it for free. So we have an imbalance there. But there is a real lack of art appreciation that runs across the culture, I think, and that speaks to the lack of arts education in the schools. It's hard to teach and develop an appreciation for the arts if there isn't the educational component to go along with it, to expose people to the many opportunities that are presented. So I don't want to end without mentioning Monument. Huh. You know, I know you don't want to talk about details, but you have a project coming, yes, called Monument that will potentially be at the Hudson Hall.
Yeah, and it feels really great to bring it back home to that space.
So what does that mean, bring it back?
Well, it's several years ago, that is where a lot of the initial rehearsals were happening. This was back in the days when it was called the Hudson Opera House, and it was a little more DIY, off the grid, under the radar kind of vibe. And there is an event, and David Longstreth from the Dirty Projectors, who just had a great album release.
The Dirty Projectors?
The Dirty Projectors. Okay. And they, basically, he was called the artist in residence at the Hudson Opera House. And so I said, "Hey, Tammy, what's this artist in residence thing?" And she's like, "Why? Do you want one?"
Yes, of
course. The broom and the mop.
Right. Yeah. So yeah, me, a broom and a mop, and this an exquisite dancer I collaborate with a lot, Logan Kruger, spent about a month in the Opera House working out this piece. And since then, it's...
No, when is this? When was this?
This was in 2014.
Okay. All right. So 3 years ago.
3 years ago. And since then, it's... we've created it in four different sizes. It's toured around, well, the U.S. and the U.K. and got a lot of great press. So in a way, now that the Hudson Hall is coming to fruition, it mm-hmm. feels very nice to be bringing that work back into that okay. space.
And it's a two-person performance?
Well, it started as a solo at the Museum of Modern Art, and then it became a duo. This past summer, we performed it with a cast of eight at the Jacob's Pillow Festival.
Mm.
And the idea for this summer is to develop... so if we have extra small and large, we're looking for a kind of medium-sized sweet spot where it will be, you know, a fully fleshed out, exciting evening-length work, but still on a scale where it's feasible to tour it.
Sounds exciting.
Yeah.
And I guess you two are also talking about potential other ways of working together?
Lots of ways.
Lots of things are in
well,
the mix, huh?
You know, Adam is a great choreographer and Hudson-based, and I hope the conversation will be continuous and ongoing.
Mm-hmm. Well, I hope that's true for us also, that you'll come back and visit us in the studio. It's been great to have you. Is there anything you want to say before we sign off? Do you have anything you'd like to bring up?
Wow, it's such a pleasure to be here.
Thank you.
Talk with you.
It's great to have you. I can't wait to see Monument, how it manifests.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tammy.
Thank you, Robert.
Thank you, Adam. Thank you, Joyce. We're going to go out with some music from Eugenia Zuckerman and Anthony Newman, A Bach Sonata.